You know, it's really my honor to be able to introduce Tim Kirkson today. He is local. We like him because he's one of us. He's around here. His father was a member of Sabre, and so he's got Sabre generationally. We all can't say that necessarily. Attended and graduated from Walter Johnson High School. Could that be more perfect? Could be more fitting? Where he was not only a star baseball player, but he played on the basketball team. Power forward, I believe. Attended the University of Maryland, and at both of those institutions of higher learning, he has returned as a commencement speaker, and is in high demand for that. Now, we have a wonderful coincidence this year, as he is the honoree of the Baseball Writers of America Career Excellence Award. Now, this award used to be called the Spink Award, and I think a lot of Sabre guys think it should still be called the Spink Award. But if you don't know what that is, let me just mention a few of the people who have won this award before. Ring Lardner, Grantlin Rice, Haywood Brown, Roger Angel, Peter Gammons, Jason Stark. There's much more I could say. He's a deep individual, but I want to close with saying that every night when I watch baseball, I really believe that every single one of the baseball games in the major leagues is being played for Tim Kirkson. Here's Tim.
Thank you. It's an honor for me to be here. My dad loved Sabre. I love Sabre. You people are all completely out of your minds, and I love every one of you for it. Thank you, especially Bruce. And Bruce, please stop sending me that trivia question every day. I get like 1 out of 10. It's embarrassing. I'm supposed to know this stuff. I'm wearing my Walter Johnson sweater here in honor of all of you. I worked for the school paper. It was called The Pitch. I did some work for the yearbook. It was called The Windup. But I always felt there was some destiny involved that I went to a high school named after the greatest pitcher of all time, and I made a career out of baseball, which makes me, of course, the luckiest guy in the whole world. And I'm especially lucky lately, because the last two extended trips I've been on have been to Cooperstown and to Williamsport. One, of course, is the home of the greatest players of all time. The other is the home to baseball at its purest. I'm not sure how I got to Cooperstown, but I know for sure why ESPN sends me to Williamsport every year. It's for scale and context only, believe me. So when I interview one of those kids, and he's way bigger than me, which happens all the time, we realize how big these kids are. And occasionally when I interview a really little kid, we see how small they really are. I once interviewed a kid named Terrence Gist from South Carolina. He was 5'10". He weighed 185 pounds. And I asked him on TV, I said, "Terrence, when was the last time you were my size?" And he said, "In the second grade." Thank you. So I was in Williamsport last night, this morning, and I have to go back this afternoon because I have to work tonight and tomorrow morning. And 3 weeks ago, I was in Cooperstown for the greatest weekend of my professional life. I can't even begin to tell you what that was like. So the Friday night of induction weekend, I go to a party with my family. We have a table for 10, and Johnny Bench walks by our table, the nicest man in the world, and I say, "Johnny, could you come over and meet my two brothers? They're great college baseball players." So he said, "Sure, let's get some pictures." So I assume we're going to take some pictures with Johnny Bench. Instead, he takes out his camera and starts to take pictures of my entire family, which was absolutely great. But I said, "Johnny, look, you're the greatest catcher of all time. We need you in the pictures with us." So He gives his camera to this other guy and says, all right, take pictures of the Kirkchin family with me. And that guy was Paul Molitor, who got more hits than Willie Mays. And now he's taking pictures of the Kirkchin family with Johnny Bench. That's Johnny Bench for you. So the next day, I make a speech. And after the speech, I go to the Otisaga Hotel. And Johnny Bench sees me there. And he says, come with me. And he takes me out to the veranda, which overlooks the lake, the most beautiful scene you've ever seen. And he said, I do this with all first-time Hall of Fame players. And he said, come sit next to me. We're the only two on the veranda. And he says, I want you to look at that lake. I want you to not say a word for 1 minute. I want you to think about where you are, how you got here, and how many people helped you get here. And I sat next to Johnny Bench and looked at that lake for 1 minute, and I'm sorry, I almost cried again. It was so powerful. It was so amazing. And again, Johnny takes all the players there, and this time he took a writer out there, and I can't even begin to tell you what a thrill that was for me. There were so many thrills. The next morning, we're going to the induction for the players, the real induction, and I'm on a bus with all Hall of Famers. It's like, who doesn't belong on this bus? It was amazing. So there's a seat open next to me, and this very regal, elegant-looking man comes up and says, can I sit next to you? And it was Sandy Koufax. So I know Sandy, and I've spoken to Sandy before, and Sandy can be tricky if he's not interested in talking. So I decided not to ask him about the perfect game or his great curveball or going 97 and 27 his last 4 years. So I knew he was a great basketball player, and I love basketball also, not like I love baseball. So I said to Sandy, could you dunk it when you were at the University of Cincinnati? And he says, of course I could. He goes, look at my hands. As we know, he has historically big hands. And what I knew he had long arms, and he says, look at my arms. He says, my sleeve length is 37 inches. So with these giant hands, I could palm it. And with these giant long arms, I could dunk it easily. So I sat there with Sandy Koufax for 15 minutes at the Hall of Fame and talked only about basketball. And it was just glorious. And that weekend, again, reminded me what I think we all know, that baseball is the greatest game. It always has been, and it always will be. I love it more than you'll ever know. And it's the best game for so many different reasons. The players come in all shapes and sizes, of course. I saw Pedro Martinez in Cooperstown, and he told me once that when he played in rookie ball, he weighed 138 pounds, which is roughly what I weigh, and he threw 93 miles an hour at 138 pounds. I said, Pedro, how could you do that? He goes, well, God gave me that. I saw Dennis Eckersley. Dennis Eckersley has been a part of all sorts of great things. That's why baseball is so great. These bizarre things happen. He picked off Kenny Williams in a game and then went 3.5 years without picking off anybody. And then he picked off Kenny Williams again. I mean, this can only happen in baseball. We love the game. It's the best game because it's so old. And the players are so revered, the ones who came before us. So Paul Molitor told me once that he went to a luncheon, much like this, but there were batting champions only at the luncheon. So Molitor walks in, and he sees Ted Williams talking to Joe DiMaggio in the corner. And as soon as Molitor walks in, Ted Williams blows off Joe DiMaggio and runs over to Paul Molitor and shakes his hand and says, God, I love watching you hit. You are a great hitter. And then peppers him with questions. What are you thinking when it's 2-0 up there? And Molitor told me he's thinking, oh, my God, he, the greatest hitter of all time, just blew off Joe DiMaggio to come over and talk to me. He goes, I didn't even know what to say. I was a blithering idiot because I'm talking to Ted Williams. It's the best game because the players are so unbelievably talented. This is a true story. I know it sounds apocryphal, but it's been confirmed. So George Brett has a sore ankle and is on the injured list, but he's good enough to go out to the golf course for the Royals team golf tournament. And he's standing on 18, welcoming everyone through. He's on crutches, and he's got his putter with him. So one group decides to have a little fun and hit into the green while everyone else is putting. And George sees the ball coming from 150 yards away. He drops his crutches. He takes his putter. He hits the ball out of midair with a blade on the putter that is that wide and hits it 150 yards back down the fairway. I said, George, please. That's impossible. Nobody could do that. And he said, well, it was 1980. And that was the year, of course, every time he swung at anything, he hit it really hard. It's the best game because the players are so unbelievably competitive. I saw Cal Ripken at Cooperstown. This is a raging conflict of interest, but I used to play basketball with him all the time. We play in this dingy, dinky little gym. And if we were on opposing teams, he really enjoyed, if his man was late getting down on offense, he enjoyed harassing me all the way down the court. Like, he would pick me up at the end line in the smallest pickup game ever and harass me all the way down the court. Finally, I just looked at him, and he's a foot taller than me, weighs 100 pounds more than me. I finally said, would you please just leave me alone? Would you stop trying for 1 second? And he said, no. And that's who he is. And I just heard this story recently. Joe Orsulak, former Oriole, one of his teammates, in retirement, and I didn't know this, but Joe Orsulak was a great ping pong player in high school. He was like a 3-state champion. So he said, I played Rip in retirement in ping pong the other night. I beat him in 24 straight games, and he wouldn't go home until he beat me. He said he beat me in the 25th game, and he went home at 2 o'clock in the morning. That's who Ripken is. That's who they all are. It's the best game because of people like you. Sabre, what you people do, the stories you tell, the research you do. Mike Monaco, who I did some games with last night in Williamsport, and I told him where I was coming, he said, make sure you tell everyone at Sabre that I read every word that they write on Baseball Reference. He just made sure that you guys know what a great job you do, and I can't stress enough how important it is that we have someone doing real research here, because we get a lot of things wrong, believe me, and somebody needs to correct us. I did a radio show a few years ago, and the first question from the host of the show was, Tim, I've got a trivia question for you. He said, Nolan Ryan did something 27 times that no other pitcher has ever done even as many as 3 times. So I'm completely stumped. And he said he had 27 immaculate innings and no one else has had more than 2. So I know this is totally wrong, but I'm too polite to say anything to him. And I said, I don't think that's right. And he goes, no, that is definitely right. I think Nolan Ryan had 2, not 27, but only the Sabre people are going to get this right. As for Nolan Ryan, by the way, I do know this is true. He threw out the first ball at a Rangers game when he was like 62 years old. And he had gotten loose underneath the stadium, and he goes to the top of the rubber, and he's got Jim Sundberg catching him. Jim Sundberg caught him with the Rangers. So Ryan gets up there, and the scouts got their radar gun out because it's Nolan Ryan throwing. And he throws the one pitch, and he throws it at 85 miles an hour, and he's 62 years old. And Jim Sundberg, Major League catcher, 8 Gold Gloves, said, I had to crouch down real fast just to catch it, and I split my pants right there on the field. When I worked at the Sun here, I just threw a little note in one day, just to show you how things get fouled up, that the year that Joe DiMaggio hit in 56 straight games, he only struck out 13 times. So I'm driving around a month later or so, and I'm listening to some broadcaster doing a game, and he said, I saw a really interesting note the other day. The year that Babe Ruth hit 60 home runs, he only struck out 13 times. So we had to explain, no, you've got that wrong. It's like when Roger Clemens struck out 20 Seattle Mariners in 1986. First guy ever to strike out 20 in a 9-inning game. So his next start was in Seattle 5 days later. And the night before the start, he gets interviewed on live TV in Seattle. And the interviewer says, "Roger, the last time you faced the Mariners, you struck out 30. So Roger had to say, "Well, actually, it was only 20. And the guy patted him on the shoulder and said, "Well, maybe 30 the next time." To which Roger should have said, "Yeah, I'm going to pitch 10 innings and strike out everyone." So again, thanks for getting the research and all the numbers right. And speaking of the numbers, I must say, some days, I worry a little bit too much that we have too many numbers today. My dad was a mathematician, PhD, MIT undergrad, so please give me all the numbers you can. But sometimes I worry that we have too many numbers and we've kind of lost the meaning of the game, which is a bit troublesome. And obviously, I think we have too many walks, too many strikeouts, and too many home runs. And here's how bad it's gotten. The strikeout craze, the strikeout rate is so out of control. This is a true story. There's a major league third baseman who's been sent to the minor leagues and is trying to get his way back. He's playing in a minor league game a few years ago. And there's a runner, there's nobody on base, 0-2 count to the batter in the fifth inning. And he hits a foul pop-up. Third baseman goes over, catches it in foul territory. And the pitcher on his own team goes over to him and says, "Why didn't you drop that on purpose? I could have struck that guy out. My only way to the big leagues is if I have a great strikeout rate." And there's something really wrong with that. I told that story to Buddy Bell, former Gold Glover, and he said, "No, Tim, that didn't happen. You just told me that to piss me off, didn't you?" And I said, "No, Buddy, that actually happened. And that's not very healthy." And with the craze of walks and strikeouts and homers, I'm sorry, I think we've lost track of how to run the bases. Try to follow me on this. A few years ago in the minor leagues, there's a young player on first base with one out. It's 10-0. It's a spring training game. We're in the eighth inning. So Andy Van Slyke, the first base coach for the Mariners, tells this kid, "Look, if there's a double play grounder, you don't have to go kill the shortstop or the second baseman. It's 10-0 in a spring training game. So get near the bag and then peel off into right field." So the next batter strikes out. So now there are two outs with a runner at first, and the batter hits a ground ball deep in the hole at shortstop, and the runner, not recognizing that the game and the situation has changed, gets close to second base and peels off into right field. He probably could have beaten the throw, and he didn't run to second base as you're supposed to do. So Andy Van Slyke goes to the dugout, and Lloyd McClendon, his manager, said, "What the hell was that?" And Andy said, "I have no idea what that was. I didn't feel like I needed to tell him that he had to run to second base there." At the Little League World Series a few years ago, I met a kid named Cole Wagner. He's the best 12-year-old hitter I've ever seen, and a great kid from a great family. So I get to talking to him about how much he hits and everything else, and I asked him, first off, he said he hits 360 days a year. And stupid reporter in me forgot to ask, which 5 days don't you hit? But I asked him, "Do you use a wood bat in order to start to get ready for pro ball?" And he goes, "Yeah, I use a wood bat every day." And I said, "Well, can you really tell the difference between a wood bat and an aluminum bat?" And he said, "Well, yeah, my exit velocity is 94.1 with an aluminum bat and 81.4 with a wood bat." He's 12 years old, and he knows the exit velocity with wood and with aluminum. Sorry, that worries me just a little bit. But we're going to get out of this because baseball survives any sort of issue. We're going to correct the game because there are players all over the place, veteran players and managers, who are here to help. Mike Trout's coming off the injured list tomorrow, And we all know what a great player he is. Let me just quickly tell you who he is. So Raul Ibanez, a few years ago in spring training, invented this game during batting practice that if you hit like that screen over there, you get 2 points, that screen, 3 points, that screen, 1 point. So they play this game in batting practice, and the first day they play it, Ibanez beats Mike Trout 6-3, and Mike Trout is furious that he has lost in this made-up game. So he comes in the next day and says, we're playing again today. And Ibanez goes, no, I don't want to play. And Trout said, we're playing the game today. And Trout beat him 40-4. This is the same Mike Trout, Raul told me, that would, in batting practice and spring training, would occasionally say, I'm going to hit a home run into that trash can there beyond the left center field fence. It's not a dumpster. It's just like a trash can. And like 12 pitches later, he hit a home run into the trash can. And then he did it several more times. That's who Mike Trout is. That's why the game is in good hands, because he's still great, and we're still going to follow him. And we're still following Justin Verlander, who I think is going to win the Cy Young in the American League after Tommy John surgery. So I played in a golf tournament with Justin Verlander, a charity tournament like 10 years ago, and he's playing in the group behind us, just to show you how competitive he is. Twice during the round, our group is putting on a par four, and a ball rolls onto our green, and Justin Verlander has driven a par four twice in one round. I saw him at the turn, and I said, how's your team doing? It was a scramble. If you don't know what a scramble is, you've got four guys playing one ball, basically. So he said, we're one under birdie. He thought a scramble is so easy. You shouldn't measure it under par. It's how many under birdie. His team was minus 23 at the end of the day, and he won the long drive contest because that's what he has to do. He always has to win. Plus, we still have Terry Francona. Tito is the funniest man I've ever met in a major league uniform. I've spent a lot of time with him. He's made me laugh more than anyone. I once asked him, I said, Tito, how bad was it in Philadelphia? And he goes, let me tell you how bad it was. He goes, we were so awful that I had to teach the players, like, not just how to play, but how to be a professional. So he said, we have a reliever named Wayne Gomes, great kid, but very raw and just didn't know how to play and didn't know how to pitch, but he was the closer of the Phillies. So Tito brings him into a game one night to save it in the ninth inning, and Wayne Gomes comes in, and he's got ketchup all over his jersey. And Tito says, Gomesy, I've been trying to teach you about professionalism. You can't come into a game with mustard all over your shirt. And he goes, sorry, Skip, when they opened up the bullpen doors, the fans threw hot dogs at me and hit me right in the chest. And then Tito looked at me and said, and we were at home. So one of those years in Boston, Tito told me that he gave $400 in cash to any Red Sox player who drove in four or more runs in a victory. But he only gave it to the first guy to have four RBIs. In other words, if three guys had four, it's the first one to get to four RBIs. So Pedro's pitching one night, and nobody can hit Pedro. And David Ortiz in the first inning hits like a grand slam. And he comes off, and he goes to Tito and says, give me my $400. Tito told me he went through like $28,000 of his own money paying off those players. It was great. By the way, with David Ortiz, this just shows you, and it's okay, believe me, the difference between the players and the writers in Cooperstown. So at the All-Star game, I saw David Ortiz, and he's doing TV, and we're going to Cooperstown like 4 days later. So I go to David, and I say, David, I'll see you in Cooperstown. And he said, oh, you're coming to see me. I said, yeah, David, I'm only coming to see you. I'm not going there for any other reason. I had such a good time in Cooperstown. The people I met there and the people I reunited with there. I saw Jim Cott again. I mean, Jim Cott is the sweetest guy you'll ever meet. And by the way, Jim Cott recently shot his age in golf twice in 1 week. You know how hard that is to do? And he did it once playing left-handed, and then he did it playing right-handed. Think about that for a second. And Johnny Bench, who was all over Cooperstown, told me this story about Bob Gibson that I'd never heard before. Apparently, Johnny's dad was a really good player. So when Johnny was 16 years old, he and his dad are watching all these baseball games, and his dad would routinely say, watching these major league games, "I could hit that guy. I could hit that guy." And Johnny's thinking, "Dad, they're big league pitchers. I don't think you can hit them." So Johnny's rookie year, he told me, he's facing Bob Gibson, and he strikes out three times in three at-bats. And the third time, he goes back to the bench, and he's laughing out loud. And Dave Bristol, his manager, is furious. And he looks at him and he goes, "What are you doing? You just struck out for the third time. What is so funny?" And Johnny looks at Dave Bristol and said, "My dad could never hit that guy." So just to finish, the day after I won this award, Johnny Bench called me at my house, and he said, "Congratulations, Tim. Welcome to the club. You're one of us now." So let's be clear. I'm not in their club. I'm not one of them. But still, the greatest catcher of all time called me on the phone to congratulate me. And then he said very softly and very poignantly, he said, "Tim, you know, it's moments like this that take you back to Little League." And then he said, "And let's face it, Tim, you could still fit into a Little League uniform." So thanks for having me. I'm going back to Williamsport tonight after this speech, where 52% of the kids are taller than me. Thank you.